Welcome to Home But Not Alone with Tim and Sarah, where we talk about real life as a stay-at-home Catholic parent. If it's noon and you're still in your pajamas, have reheated your coffee 3 times and tried to pray but got distracted, this is the place for you. Life is crazy, but through it all, remember, you're never alone. You've got God's grace and our friendship coming your way. Today on Home But Not Alone, we're going to chat about vocations. I think the idea of a vocation is often misunderstood, or maybe I should say not fully understood. We have vocations awareness and vocations discernment initiatives for our children, but I think there's something vital we're missing in the discussion, and we want to bring that out today and encourage you as parents in fostering a true sense of vocation in your children. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Sarah. How are you today?
I am doing good. We had the tree guy out here grinding some stumps down. I was a little bit worried about the background noise, but they finished, so this should be nice.
That's good on your end, because on my end, they're still installing a new furnace and air conditioner in my house. That is an all-day job today. And hopefully it's not too distracting or too loud for
I mean, no worries, because aren't we all parents used to distracting noises?
Oh my gosh, I'm not sure what it's like to not have distracting noises around.
Hey, so I was thinking maybe we could start this conversation about vocations by sharing a little bit of our own vocation stories. So obviously we both in the end have discerned the vocation to marriage. Yes. But I'm interested in understanding like what the process looked like and maybe our understanding of what a vocation is. So do you want to share first?
Sure. So when I was younger, of course, I just assumed as a kid, like, oh yeah, I'm going to grow up, get married, because like a lot of us, I saw my parents, I saw other people's parents, and I saw the priest, but I didn't see him that much. So that was, to me, a very distant thing. And then as I got older, I thought, well, maybe I should consider this. I now realize as an adult, everybody should discern the different vocations and not just focus on, well, here's definitely what I'm going to do. And so I thought, okay, should I be a priest? So I took it to prayer, and I really said, God, do you want me to be a priest? And I very clearly heard God say, no, but thank you for asking. And another time, I was persistent. And it was, you know, I don't know, a few months, maybe a year later. I was like, God, you know, I know it won't be easy, but I'll become a ministerial priest of Christ's church if that's what you want. And again, I heard God say, no, really, you don't have to do that. That's all right. And I continued, and there was one more time I really brought it to prayer, and I was just like, you know, it's so important. We need good priests. It's such hard work. I'm willing to work hard. And so I said, God, are you sure? I'm willing to do this. I am willing to be a priest if that is your will. And I promise, I swear to you, I heard very clearly on my heart, God look right at me and say, stop it. Okay. My church has enough problems. All right, my church has more than enough problems. It doesn't need you. Now go over and do youth ministry where you can do the least amount of damage. And I said, all right,
fair
enough.
That is too funny.
I said, fair enough. That's, you know. So I know a lot of people, especially people who have entered into religious life, they've had the opposite experience where they were like, oh, I just don't know if I can do this, but I feel God calling. I felt God clearly saying, stay away. Okay, no, you are not supposed to be over here. And so I always struggled with loneliness growing up. And I do a little bit now, but not nearly as much. And the idea of the single vocation didn't even cross my mind. And I don't think it crosses most people's minds. We think of, okay, well, most of us get married, a handful of people are called to religious life, and that's it. But the single vocation is such a powerful and amazing thing. And like most people, I sought validation through relationships. But in my mid-20s, I really became more aware of my own personal value. And I became aware of the important role I played in the church as a single person. And so I started to kind of embrace that, especially working in youth ministry. I was able to give absurdly long hours to serve the church in ways that I wouldn't if, say, I was married with kids. And I began to embrace my single life. It was such a blessing to embrace that time. And now I can't serve the church that way anymore. And that's okay. But there are a lot of ways I used to be able to that I could serve the church as a single person, and it was such a blessing. So I then felt called to marriage. Just over time, I felt clearly this is where God's calling. And my dad had just passed away. This was in 2014. My dad had just passed away. And I had recently been feeling God put on my heart that he was going to send me the woman I'd spend the rest of my life with. And then I met my wife. And I found out she really, really liked me. And so I started discerning whether or not I was even ready to date.
Oh, no.
Because I was struggling with loss.
Right.
And so I promised myself that I would pray about this for a month. After 2 weeks of praying, I knew that I had to ask this woman out. I couldn't wait anymore. It was very, very obvious. I gave it real prayer. I gave it to God and said, you know, this is not my will, but your will. I would love to date her today, but if I'm not in a place that I can give myself fully to her in love, then I don't want to put her in that position. And so I really brought it to prayer. And I knew after 2 weeks, I had to ask this woman out. And then after one date, I was in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament at a youth conference. And I just knew God put on my heart. He said, this is who you're going to marry. And whatever it was, 9 months later, we were engaged. 6 months after that, we were married.
Oh, I love that story.
Yeah.
That's an awesome discernment story. So for me as a kid, I had this understanding of vocations. You know, the vocations were marriage, priesthood, or the religious life, right? These are the three particular vocations that the church teaches. And it's actually funny that you mention the vocation to single life, because that's not actually one that the church teaches as a particular vocation.
Sure.
Yeah. So I think in my experience, the vocation of single people is largely left out of the discussion. And I felt that growing up. Like, I felt that, you know, as a kid and as a teen and as a single young adult, that I didn't really have a vocation or a place. And I think that that's a huge misunderstanding. So while, you know, the singleness is not a vocation, like a particular vocation of the church, I think everyone has this universal vocation to holiness, which I want to talk about in a minute. But here's one thing that I learned in my experience with discerning vocations is, you know, I discerned marriage and I met my husband and I got married, and I thought that discerning, hey, you crazy baby, I thought that discerning and entering into my vocation was the thing that would make me holy. Like, that's where holiness was at. And obviously, it didn't happen that way. Marriage did not make me holy. It did quite the opposite. It brought to light all my imperfections, like all my sins, all my failings, all my weaknesses. And suddenly, I had to work harder than ever to be the person God was calling me to be. So I was like, man, I must be getting something wrong about this whole idea of vocation. And that is when I started, like, looking into holiness and vocation and virtue and what all these things actually mean. And here's the thing. Milk? You want milk? My baby is a guest again here. So here's the thing. Vocation, everyone has a universal vocation to holiness, right? All Christians are called to this. And that is the missing link, I think. So if we look at the definition of vocation from Father Hardin's dictionary, which I love to pull out, it says a call to a distinctive state and light in which the person can reach holiness. And it goes on to talk about the universal call to holiness. So there's this distinction between the universal call to holiness, which is really where single people need to enter into what their vocation is, both as children and as young adults and as adults, but not necessarily looking at that as, you know, the particular vocation is marriage, priesthood, and religious life. And I think if we can start recognizing and help our children recognize this universal call to holiness, then marriage isn't this thing that, I mean, vocation isn't this thing that we're going to find sometime in the future, at which point we'll finally be holy. Like, vocation is for everyone. And I know I was kind of focusing on, you know, single people being left out of the vocation equation, but you had mentioned to me earlier that sometimes even marriage is looked at as like a second-rate vocation. I was hoping you could tell me a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. So there's this quote I love from Cardinal Dolan, and he says, open quote, marriage is the real vocation crisis in the United States. We have a vocation crisis to lifelong, life-giving, loving, faithful marriage. If we take care of that one, we'll have all the priests and nuns we'll need for the church, end quote. And I love this quote for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons is that it emphasizes the fact that the vocations crisis, yeah, we need more priests. We need more religious sisters. We need more religious brothers. We need all, absolutely. But these come from families most often who are practicing in the faith. The importance of the domestic church, we underestimate it all too often. We underestimate it and we think that, oh, well, you know, we take care of getting the priests and then the priests will make everybody holy. That's not how it works. We need holy families, men and women, to work together to raise up families where people will genuinely discern their vocational call. And I've seen this in many, many families, really good families, where they focus on the faith as being the central part of their family life. Mm-hmm. And what ends up happening is their children genuinely discern their vocation. But then I've seen many, many other families where the faith was kind of a side thing. And if the faith was kind of an add-on or a little extra, then as the kids are growing up, they don't even consider the possibility of discernment. They don't even consider the idea that, oh, maybe I'm called to this or maybe I'm called to this. They just think, well, no, I'll do what I want. Or they think, oh, well, obviously I'm getting married. That's what I want to do one day. That's what we're supposed to do, or that's what I feel like I'm going to do, as opposed to a genuine discernment. And I think that can result in people entering into marriages that they maybe shouldn't enter into.
Yeah.
It can result in people who otherwise would be called to a deep holy life as a priest or a religious sister, whatever it may be, not following that real path that God has called them to and missing out on that. So I think what happens all too often is, like you said, we sometimes even look at marriage as a second-rate vocation, as if we discern whether or not we're going to, especially men discern whether or not they're going to become priests. As in, vocational discernment is should include marriage discernment, but we behave as if it only involves religious life discernment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true. We tend to treat marriage as a secular institution being policed by the church, aka the people with the real vocations, the priests and bishops. And that is nonsense. Marriage is 100% a sacramental vocation instituted by God, instituted by Christ in his church. And when we misunderstand the foundation of marriage, we end up with our priorities completely out of order, and then we don't properly guide our children. So we need to recognize that the marriage, the sacramental marriage, is not some sort of secular thing being policed by the church, but rather it is something initiated by Christ as a part of the domestic church, as a vital part of the entire church.
Yeah, I think that is a really great point, you know, that we have to look at vocation as more than just the religious life. And I mean, obviously, the religious life is important. Our church cannot survive without it. But we have to see that, you know, if we put all our focus on that, then you somehow feel a failure if you do not have that, if God's not calling you to that particular vocation. And that's just a lie. That's a lie that, you know, sometimes we unintentionally put out there. So I want to go back to that.
Or you feel okay. As if you're less, as if you may not be a failure. But I've had people say to me, one guy say to me, well, good. I'm glad you're trying to live a holy marriage, but you know, it's not like you're a priest or anything. And I thought, oh, you don't understand sacramental marriage at all. Okay,
right.
Good to know.
Oh.
And I don't know if this man was married, but I really hope he wasn't, just for the sake of his bride. That would be disappointing.
Right. So I want to go back to how do we foster this sense of vocation in our children then, and not kind of give them this idea that, okay, you know, you have to wait until you're either married or religious or a priest to find, you know, your fulfillment or your meaning in life or your path to holiness. So I want to go back to talking about the universal call to holiness. So in the Catechism, and I lost my reference point, it says, wait, you can look it up. It says that all Christians have this universal vocation to holiness. And so that, I think, is where we really need to start with our kids, because our kids have this universal vocation to holiness as well. All of us do. And so something that I really try hard to help my children understand is that they do have a vocation, and they have one right now. And God is calling them. He has a purpose for them in their state of life right now. As children, He has a way for them to pursue holiness, to be a saint, and they don't have to wait till they grow up and find their particular vocation in order for them to live lives that are pleasing to God. And I think, you know, examples of saints who were children, not necessarily even ones that just died as children, but saints who lived holy lives as children, is important to show our kids that, you know, they can enter into this pursuit of holiness right now. So I think we have to help our children actively and currently follow their general vocation to prepare them for discerning their particular vocation, you know, if they're called in the end to priesthood, religious life, or marriage. So I would say we have to stop making vocation discernment seem like something that is far off for children and start teaching vocation discernment as something they can do right now. So I try to have my kids ask themselves, you know, what is God calling you to do with your life right now? What is God's purpose for you right now? You know, what's your job? How are you going to be holy? And a lot of times it comes down to, you know, number one, being obedient to your parents. You know, there's the fourth commandment. This is how you are called to practice holiness, is to learn obedience to your parents and ultimately to learn obedience to God. You know, be kind and loving to your siblings. That's part of their vocation. To study hard at school. Like, that is fulfillment for them, because that is what God wants of them in their particular state of life. They're students. They're learning about, you know, the whole, we should talk about our philosophy of education sometime, because you said some really interesting things in an earlier episode. So I want to come back to that. But it's part of what our children are called to do right now. And I think that helping them find holiness in that puts this, you know, whole different spin on their work, their schoolwork as children. But most importantly, their vocation is to pray, to learn the faith, and to develop a loving relationship with Jesus. And they don't have to wait for marriage or for the religious life or for the priesthood to do that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, and I also think one of the reasons why people struggle with this so much in understanding vocational discernment is because we have so many saints who are priests, who are popes, who are religious sisters, and we don't have as many who are, say, married people. We so often turn to the example of Lewis and Zelie Martin, mm-hmm. Therese of Lisieux's parents, because they're recently canonized, and because, you know, other than the Blessed Mother and Saint Joseph, I think they're the only married couple that's ever been canonized, where both of them are. And so I think we don't have enough married couples. We don't have enough married individuals, whether, you know, the husband or the wife, one of them is canonized as a saint. And I think that's part of the struggle. Now, some people have asked me, well,
or non-religious single.
Yes, saints, exactly.
Right. That kind of makes you feel like you're, I mean, it can make you feel like you're less than. And I mean, it's not intentional. That's for sure.
No.
We're not trying to send this message that, you know, married people or single people are somehow less than, but it, to our fallen and imperfect minds, it can come across that way.
It can. And I think someone asked me once, why are there so many, say, popes who are canonized saints and not as many just, you know, members of the laity? And if you look through history, well, not everybody could read and write.
Oh, yeah.
Not everybody is recorded as being, you know, like, okay, somebody was pope in the year 1120. I don't know who it was, but we know somebody was Pope and we know who it was. I could look it up. But there are most people in the year 1120. We don't know anything about them. They probably couldn't read and write. The printing press didn't exist yet, so they weren't publishing a bunch of things. And so we don't necessarily have the records or the writings of as many people who weren't, say, bishops or kings or queens or whatever they may have been. And so it has been historically difficult. And I think it's important for the church in our modern era to do its best to find more people and say, hey, is this person, you know, worthy of the term venerable? Is this person, you know, the servant of God worthy of that term? And I think it's important for all of us to pray for the intercessions of those who we know have died and who lived holy lives, because miracles can happen and then they can be canonized as saints. And I'm not just talking about, say, you know, somebody we knew personally, but there are great people out there for whom we can ask their intercession, presuming that they are in heaven. And you know, that is, I think, an important role that we can play, is to continue to not only live holy lives ourselves, or at least try to, and challenge our children to do so, challenge others to, but also to call upon the holy men and women who are not yet canonized, but who are hopefully in heaven, and to maybe participate in their eventual road to canonization. That would, I think those would be great, because we really need those examples. The saints play an important role in our lives. And as single persons, as married persons, these are very, very important people. And I think that's one of the reasons why Lewis and Zelie Martin and Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, we can talk about another time, but he was not married. He was not a priest, and he's a blessed. He's definitely on his way toward canonization. These saints, or saints and blessed, have developed a great following in recent years. And I think part of it is there is a yearning for connecting with a saint who has something in common with us in our current vocation or in our current state of life. So,
and that's what I find so important about, you know, also talking to the kids about the communion of saints, and the church militant, the church suffering, the church triumphant, and how we're all connected, and letting the kids know that we are saints with a little s, but yeah, we are saints too. And just tying that into the whole, our vocation is our journey towards heaven. Our vocation is our participation in the sainthood, whether it's with a small s or a big s, you know, the saints already in heaven, or us on our way there. And how, whether it's our general vocation, you know, that general universal call to holiness, or it's that particular vocation, the marriage, priesthood, religious life, it's all about that path to heaven and that journey to heaven. And we're all in this together. We can all work on it together. We can pray for each other. We can ask the intercession of the saints. But it really comes down to, it's about that journey towards sainthood and just discerning and remaining on that path.
So we want to thank everybody for listening, but I don't want to just thank everybody. I want to thank you, whoever you are. I don't want you to just think of yourself as one of many we're speaking to. We always pray that God gives us the words to reach the person, each individual person who is listening to us. So I want to thank you personally for listening to us today. Join us next time when we talk about inappropriate things people say to parents and how to properly respond. When you can, if you can, subscribe, leave us a comment, share this, follow us on social media, whatever you can do. We appreciate your help. Sarah, where can people find you?
ToJesusSincerely.com is my website, and I'm on social media at ToJesusSincerely.
And you can find me at chastelove.org and at the chastelove on the different social media platforms. So we can debate whether or not leggings are pants, but this is no debate. Pajama pants are pants. So you can wear them to the store. You can wear them wherever you want. They are pants. And remember, you're never alone.